I'm Alex Michaels, and welcome to the Issue Is podcast. This week, we talk to the mayor of San Jose, Matt Mahan, plus the chairman of the Republican National Committee, Mike Whatley. We talk to Whatley in a bit about the state of the Republican Party, the importance of the California congressional races to the whole picture, plus some of Donald Trump's recent comments about election integrity and claiming that he would have won California if Jesus was counting the ballot. Whatley, not exactly defending him on that. It's interesting what he said. It made a lot of national news, and we're excited to play that for you in a bit. But we begin with Matt Mahan, the mayor of San Jose, the biggest city in Northern California, with us this week on a week where Politico wrote about him as the mayor that's most annoying Governor Newsom. Mahan is a big public supporter of Proposition 36, the effort to reform Prop 47. The governor is opposed to that. And it's interesting what's playing out, these different coalitions, splitting the Democratic Party over what to do about criminal justice reform. Mahan talked about that, his approach when it comes to homelessness and more on The Issue Is. Here's our conversation. Mayor Mahan, welcome back to The Issue Is, and welcome to our studio for the first time. Good to see you.
Thank you, Alex. Great to be here.
So Prop 47, you said you voted for it. You were a supporter of it.
I was, because the core premise that we should get people into treatment, job training, and try to move away from the era of mass incarceration is still valid. But what we've seen is that there are some unintended consequences of Prop 47. The reason I support Prop 36 is that it reforms Prop 47 and focuses on this phenomenon of repeat offenders, often stuck deeply in addiction to serious drugs like fentanyl and meth, and helps break that cycle and gives us the opportunity to fulfill the promise of Prop 47, which is to get to the era of mass treatment.
Okay, so there's like two major aspects of this. One is drugs, one is some of the retail theft. Let's start with the drugs. What exactly does it do? Because it gives more ability for judges, right?
That's right. And this is on a third drug offense. So you get a second chance, a third chance. On a third drug offense, judges have the ability, and it is at their discretion. It's not a mandated sentence, it's not three strikes, but the judge can look at all the evidence and has the ability to say to someone, you have a choice, treatment or county jail. I've talked to a number of addicts in their middle ages today who tell me they're only alive today because they were forced to detox because they spent a month at the county jail. That's not the goal. The goal is to get people into treatment. But if you're stuck on the streets, deep in an addiction to a substance like fentanyl, I think the compassionate thing is for us to intervene and give you a chance to make a better decision.
And obviously, a lot of people, when they talk about Prop 47, they talk about retail theft. What does it do in terms of changing the penalties there?
Well, similarly, on a third offense, judges have the discretion to charge it as a felony, which would come with jail or prison time. And so it increases penalties. But I want to also note that I see these crises as intertwined. We have, since Prop 47 passed, we've seen participation in drug courts drop. We've seen overdose deaths more than double. We've seen homelessness go up nearly 60% while it is down in most states across the country. And especially in the last 5-6 years, we've seen rising retail theft, sometimes to fund an addiction. And so I think these issues of unsheltered homelessness, addiction, property crime are intertwined in a complicated way. And what we need are compassionate solutions that prioritize treatment, but don't leave people to suffer and die on our streets as we see far too often.
So this measure is really splitting the Democratic Party right now. The California Politico playbook wrote about you and your advocacy of Prop 36, something that Governor Newsom is not supporting. And we want to put up their headline this week. It says, "Meet the mayor getting under Newsom's skin." Picture of the two of you. Just recently, he signed a bunch of bills in San Jose at a Home Depot, crime-related bills passed by the legislature. You see, like, basically every Democrat in the whole state there, except for you, the mayor of San Jose, not invited to that event. What is the nature of your relationship with Governor Newsom right now?
I have a lot of respect for our governor, and I stood with him on Prop 1, which will add 10,000 treatment beds. I think Prop 36 will help us ensure they go to those who most need them. I stood with the governor in San Jose, led the way on building the tiny homes that the governor has helped fund. And I agree with his message around greater accountability for cities and counties to get people out of encampments and indoors. But I have to say, I'm a little surprised and trying to figure out you know, where he's at on this, because to me, when you go out to the encampments, you see the suffering, you see the addiction, you talk to the small businesses that are impacted. If we don't have the tools to compel people who are severely addicted into treatment, if we don't give judges the ability to mandate treatment, I think it's going to be very hard to end this era of encampments. He ran a campaign for Prop 1 called Treatment, Not Tents. And part of the way we're going to get there is by giving judges tools for getting people into treatment.
So you're in favor of Prop 36. The mayor of San Francisco, the mayor of San Diego, both Democrats, also in favor of this. But the Newsom was asked about this, and he basically kind of said this. This is not the Democratic Party. It's just a couple of mayors talking about you. And it is true that a lot of the Democratic legislators are basically saying this is going to bring us back to the era of mass incarceration that targeted black and brown people disproportionately, that this is unnecessary, expensive, and a conservative approach. Why do you think so many Democrats are not in favor of Prop 36?
Well, I think to be really precise about it, I think the division is really between local elected officials who may be Democrats or independents or Republicans and serve in nonpartisan offices at the local level, hearing from our constituents every single day, having people come up to us in the grocery store saying, what are you doing about the fentanyl overdoses, the retail theft, the tent encampments sprawled across our cities, and then Sacramento? And I understand there's a concern about the fiscal situation in Sacramento over the coming years, but what I'm hearing from Democrats at the local level is a lot of support for Prop 36, the reform of Prop 47, because they're grappling with these issues every single day. So I think it is unfair to say this is just a couple of mayors. I'm hearing from local Democrats across the state who are signing on to the Yes on 36 campaign. In terms of disproportionate impacts, the data would show the opposite. It's our communities of color that are most impacted by drug overdoses, by homelessness. It's our small businesses. In San Jose, we have 60,000 small businesses, over half of which are immigrant-owned. Those are the folks coming to me every day asking us to do more, asking us to do better, asking us to break this cycle of addiction and theft and homelessness and get people into treatment. That's what Prop 36 is about. Finally, on your point about cost, the LAO scored this measure and said that at most, this is the worst case scenario, this would cost $100 million, a couple hundred million dollars. Keep in mind the state budget is $300 billion. And could add a few thousand people to the jail population, which is about 2%. This is not a huge number of people, but it's on us, statewide, state, county, and local governments, to implement this in a way that ensures that it gets people into treatment. That is the goal, and for some folks, there will have to be a consequence to incentivize them to engage with treatment.
Have you spoken directly with the governor about this?
The governor and I have a good ongoing dialogue, and to be honest, we are aligned on most issues when it comes to homelessness, public safety, housing, climate, et cetera. This just happens to be a place where we have a difference of opinion, and it may be, frankly, just based on where we sit right now, the offices we're both in.
One issue where I think you and the governor have a lot of agreement on is what happened at the Supreme Court recently. So the Supreme Court basically giving cities more ability to deal with homeless encampments and to clear those encampments. Different cities, different counties interpreting that differently. How are you interpreting that in San Jose? What's your approach right now when it comes to homeless encampments?
Well, I agree with the governor that we need local governments to, across the state, to be accountable for getting people out of encampments that are unsafe, unsanitary, and get people into safe, dignified shelter and treatment. I will say that one of the challenges our outreach teams run into is a very high percentage of people on our streets who are trapped in a cycle of addiction and are what we call service resistant, are not ready to say yes to shelter. And that's one of the reasons that I believe that we have a duty to intervene and save lives. And we need the tools for a judge to have the discretion to mandate someone into treatment. But by and large, the governor and I are very aligned on how we end homelessness, unsheltered homelessness in California. It's building basic dignified shelter, it's building treatment centers, and it's requiring that people come in off the streets. I just happen to think we need Prop 36 as a tool in order to get there.
Just recently, you were in San Diego checking out this concept of safe sleeping sites. You were with the mayor there, Todd Gloria. What did you learn there? What does that mean? And that's something you're going to be implementing in San Jose.
That's right. Yeah, Todd Gloria personally gave me a tour of their largest safe sleeping site, which houses about 400 people. And the premise is that we need solutions today. We have to treat homelessness like the crisis that it is. Imagine an earthquake hit that put tens of thousands of people on the streets. We wouldn't say we need to wait 10, 15, 20 years to have enough money to build a brand new apartment for everyone. We would start to triage the situation, get people into safety, get people connected to services. In San Diego, they've been quite successful with getting people out of very unsafe, unmanaged encampments along the freeways, in neighborhoods, and into a managed site that has security, sanitation, case management. People aren't worried about where their next meal's coming from. That stability allows people to start to engage in drug treatment and job training and reconnect with family. That's the goal. We're going to stand up our first safe sleeping site in San Jose early next year.
Interesting. And that might be a model that the state could look at in other cities as well. As we wrap some up here, we like to have some fun. This is a game called Personal Issues, which you played the last time remotely. Now you get to play in person and we get to learn some of your favorites. So this is the first thing that comes to mind for you. You ready?
I don't know, but okay. Let's give it a try.
Okay. What's your favorite movie?
All right. Don't judge me for this. I really like The English Patient.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Who is your favorite musical artist?
Well, you know, last time you asked me about my favorite song, and I said California Love. So I grew up with hip-hop. Tupac is definitely up there.
Love that. Favorite athlete?
Oh, my gosh. Well, again, harkening back to my childhood, Michael Jordan is definitely a childhood
hero of
mine.
Tough to beat that. Yeah. Favorite way to relax?
I really like to garden and hike the outdoors.
And what's the best thing about being a Californian?
Oh my gosh. The people, the food, the weather. I can't pick one thing. We're very blessed in this state.
And apparently the gardening. Our thanks to Mayor Mahan. Now to our conversation with the chairman of the Republican National Committee. We met up with him in Buena Park. He visited the campaign headquarters for Michelle Steele, who's in a tight congressional race there, the Republican candidate. Incumbent. And he talked about this issue of election integrity and making sure that votes are counted with the effort with Republicans there in the area to encourage them to be poll workers, to be poll watchers, to get involved in the process. And it came at a time when Donald Trump was once again raising doubts about the process. So it's an interesting tap dance that the Republican National Committee chairman has to do, and take a listen to how he does it. Chairman Whatley, welcome to The Issue Is for the first time.
It's great to be with you.
And good to have you in California.
Yeah, it's great to be out here. I think that, you know, everybody kind of glosses over California because they look at where it stands on the national scene. But when you talk about the congressional seats, you talk about the majority that we have in Congress right now comes out of California. It's really important to be here.
So we have some not so subtle message behind you. Make your vote safe and secure over and over and over again.
Right.
What does that mean?
Well, what we want writ large nationally with our Protect the Vote campaign is really to get the basics of election law protections in place where we can get them. And then secondly, we want to make sure that we have volunteers and attorneys that are there anytime votes are being cast or counted. We just want to make sure that the basic protections on election integrity are going to ensure that it's easy to vote and hard to cheat.
And that's things like voter ID, things that you're probably not going to get here in California.
True, but there still is a national campaign that we want to have, and we want to have that conversation on it.
Should people trust that their vote is going to be counted fairly in California?
Yeah, and that's why we want to be here, right? And I think that people will feel more confident in that system if they know that we have volunteers and lawyers that are in the room when the votes are being cast and when the votes are being counted.
The basic message is there's not some big conspiracy. Get in the room. You can be one of the people to count,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and the thing about California law is it does allow anybody who is interested in serving in that capacity to go serve in that capacity, which I think is really good, right? I think that when you have more people who have an opportunity to take part in this process and understand this process, they're going to be more confident in it.
If Jesus came down...
When Donald Trump was interviewed by Dr. Phil recently, he said that if Jesus was counting the ballots here in California, he would have won. What does that mean?
Well, I think that, that he feels like California, there are a lot of Republicans and there are a lot of votes here. I think he was probably, you know, a little bit of a stretch. But, you know, look, I think the point that, that the president's making, the point that we're trying to make here is that we want to restore the belief that the voting system, that, that, that the election systems are going to be fair and impartial.
But Trump lost here by close to 5 million votes. Do you have evidence that he actually won this state, that there were 5 million more people that voted for him that weren't counted?
No.
So that claim about Jesus
We'll see. You know, I mean, and the president can tell stories as at any time. But that's, look, I think the key is that we want to make the point that it is very important for us to have election security protection in place, that we are going to protect the ballot, and that people are going to have faith in the sanctity of the vote.
Because there is danger, isn't there, of some people hearing that from the president, thinking, they don't count my vote, it's not fair, and then they don't vote, and then you could lose.
Well,
right?
Look, that's why we set this program up. That's exactly the conversation that we're having all across the country. We've had it in New York, we've had it in Michigan, we've had it in Pennsylvania. We're having it here because we want to go out to red states and blue states and purple states and have a conversation about how important election integrity is.
Did you ever have that conversation with the former president?
I have that conversation with him all the time.
And what does he say?
He says that he wants to make sure that the elections are going to be protected.
What do you, how do you see the contrast between Trump and Harris? Because you basically brought it down to a one-word contrast.
Well, to me, it comes down to strength versus weakness, right? And when you think about what do the American voters want right now, what really matters to every American voter, every American family, are things like jobs in the economy, security, safety. And that's really where the president is focused on. I think that this comes down to who has the ability to restore our southern border, to rebuild our economy, and to make sure that we are going to be strong enough to protect our interests at home and abroad.
Obviously, Kamala Harris is from here, spent most of her career working here. Are you reflecting on her and sort of her vision and record here in California as you think about the rest of the country?
Well, I think that's absolutely part of it. I think you also have to take a look at the fact that she is the border czar who oversaw 47 executive actions by the Harris-Biden administration to undermine the most secure southern border that we've ever had. She is the one that cast the tie-breaking vote on $2.5 trillion worth of unnecessary federal spending that caused inflation to spiral. That she is the one who is not in a, you know, supporting Israel the way that we need to be supporting our best ally. So when we look at these issues, when it comes down to the strength versus weakness, on every single one of them, Donald Trump is well ahead in every issue poll on all of those issues across the country for a reason.
So obviously the presidential race in California hasn't been all that close for that long, but the congressional races have been really close and really important. Can you talk about the importance of California to the Republican effort to keep that gavel?
Well, think about it. We have a 2-seat Republican majority in the House right now. We have 12 seats that are held by Republicans in California. 5 of those are held by Republicans in seats that Joe Biden carried. We do not have a Republican majority in Congress today without these seats in California. And if we want to hold on to that majority, even expand it, then we absolutely need to win those seats.
So what does that mean in terms of money, in terms of an effort by the RNC in the coming months?
Well, I mean, that it does mean that we have offices just like the one that we're recording this interview in. It means that we have outreach offices across the state that we're talking to minority voters, we're talking to Asian American voters, Hispanic voters, Black voters that we're going out to. It means that they're going to get support from the NRCC and the RNC financially and in terms of the resources of staff and everything else. This is a very high priority for us.
Are there any seats in particular you're especially keeping an eye on?
You know, look, I think that we have one opportunity to be able to pick up a seat in Katie Porter's district where we've got a great Republican candidate that I think we can be able to win that seat. We've got
Scott Baugh versus
absolutely right, Scott.
Versus Dave Mint.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I think that you've got those 5 seats that currently are held by Republicans in districts that Joe Biden carried. Mm-hmm. I think that's very important. And Ken Calvert is another one who's in a very, very tight district. You know, so I think that when we look at the map, those are probably the highest priorities for us.
In terms of where we go from here, Who is the voter that you're most focused on? Obviously, it's, you would say that everybody, but you got limited resources, you got limited time. Who is the person that you are most focused on getting?
Well, when we talk about get out the vote, right? Obviously, we have Republican voters. They're going to go out and vote, right? And they're going to go vote for Donald Trump. We have Democratic voters who are going to go vote, and they're going to vote for Kamala Harris. There is a group in the middle that are probably going to go vote who have not figured out who they're going to vote for. Obviously, that's a very high priority group for us. There also is a group of people, low propensity voters. We know they will vote Republican if they go vote, and we got to figure out a way that they haven't voted in 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, 8 years. We've got to dynamite them off the couch, and we want to make sure that we get them out to vote.
And what's the main message you think that gets them off the couch?
I think a conversation about strength versus weakness, about whether California is going to be strong, America is going to be strong, who is going to do the strongest job of advancing your family's interests and your community's interests. And on every single one of those issues, we feel like Donald Trump is in a great position to get those votes.
Strength versus weakness was obviously a huge theme at the RNC, and it sort of made sense a lot with Joe Biden, who is older, and now you have a different nominee in Kamala Harris. How has that changed your thinking in terms of the framing of this?
It really hasn't, right? Because with Kamala Harris, she is the one. She was the border czar. And so when we talk about, you know, the fact that 10 million illegal immigrants have come across that southern border that we know of, let alone the ones that we don't know of, right? Migrant crime is a very real issue. Fentanyl is a very real issue that has come because of her stewardship of the border. That's her, right? When we talk about who cast the tie-breaking votes on those spending bills, that was her, right? So the issue is the same because the voters have identified these as the issues that they care about. The fact is that Republicans are doing a better job of understanding what the voters want and putting solutions on the table and talking directly to them.
We'll wrap things up with a couple of fun things.
Sure.
So you out there were talking about the way you got this job from Donald Trump, and it wasn't exactly an ask.
Well, look, I mean, when the president called and said, hey, you know, Chairman McDonald, Rana, is going to be stepping down, and you need to step up. We need to make sure that we win in this election cycle, and we'd like to have you stand up for it. It's a great honor. It's a real big opportunity, obviously a tremendous challenge when you think about, you know, the gravity of this election cycle. But the fact that we have a one-seat Democrat majority in the Senate, we have a two-seat Republican majority in the House, and we have a presidency that was decided by 44,000 votes in three states last cycle. You know, this is an election that can go either way, and we feel it's a, you know, obviously, you know, we feel like we're in a great position with Donald Trump to win it. But at the same time, the RNC has to function. It has to function at a very high level, and it's an honor that the president asked me to do it.
What do you think is the biggest misconception about him behind the scenes, about Donald Trump?
Look, I think he cares deeply for this country. He cares deeply for his family. He cares deeply about everybody having the opportunity that he had to get ahead in this country. And so, you know, there are a lot of people who think that he's selfish. He's not. He is out there fighting every day for the American voters. And I will just say this, that following the assassination attempt, you know, the first conversations that he had while they were in the motorcade going to the hospital were asking, are the other people okay? Mm. Did anybody else get shot? Are they going to be okay? Are the rest of the people there? You know, when I first got a call, it was on, you know, that Saturday evening, and they said, are you guys ready? You know, because he's coming. He's coming, and we want to be there, right? He was not supposed to get there till Thursday. He ended up coming in on Sunday, right? And just before he came out on Monday evening, I was having a conversation with him backstage, and I said, sir, when you go through that door, this place is going to melt.
Mm.
Because they didn't know he was coming, and it was a complete surprise. And it was such a powerful moment where he really, I think, had the opportunity to kind of step back and ask himself, why are we doing this? You know, you're talking about a guy who had an amazing business career.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a great family. He had a great life. He does not need this. Why would he do this? And you have to ask yourself that question. And it's because he loves America and he wants this country to succeed. And he really feels like he can make a difference. Make America Great Again is a trite campaign slogan for everybody. It's very real. for Donald Trump. And that's what he's fighting for every day.
And we saw some emotion in his face that we don't usually see
true.
In that moment when he
very
walked
true.
Out there. I think it hit him. It was amazing to be there for that week and to see that up close. And lastly, we do something called personal issues, which is to get to know you.
Right.
You know, your North Carolina roots, we know that. We don't know that much about you. So what is the first thing that comes to mind when I ask you, what's your favorite TV show of all time?
You know, I watch the Atlanta Braves every night, no matter what they're doing, especially when they play the Dodgers.
Okay.
It's absolutely great.
Do you have a favorite movie?
You know, probably Moneyball. I think that's kind of the big one, or The Patriot.
Okay. Do you have a favorite actor or actress?
You know, Ronald Reagan, when he was an actor, was pretty cool to watch.
Oh, my God. There's an answer for a Republican chairman.
Right.
Yeah, the new Reagan movie.
Absolutely.
Which you guys showed about 55 times at the RNC in different places. Favorite band or musician?
You know, Hootie and the Blowfish. Can I kind of go back a little bit old school?
Do you have a favorite song?
You know, there's so many.
I only want to be with you.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we found out your favorite sports team's got to be the Braves, right?
Yeah.
And who is your role model?
You know, really, I've had such a great group of role models that I've worked with over the years. People who kind of showed me politics and how it can be done right. You know, guys like Bob Dole when I was Elizabeth Dole's chief of staff. Getting a chance to work, the first senator I worked with is a guy named Paul Coverdell that nobody has ever heard of. But he worked all day, every day to try and make a difference in the Senate. You know, things along those lines, President George W. Bush, and even Donald Trump, because he is so relentless and he works every day. And I think that really is how you have to have that sense of urgency to really help people along the way.
Well, Chairman Whatley, thank you so much for being
thank
with
you.
Us. Good luck to the Braves, not too much luck. And good luck to you out on the campaign trail.
Thank you. I
nice
appreciate
to see
it.
You. Our thanks to Chairman Whatley. Lots of folks reacting to that interview when we posted it online. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of views. The chairman of the Democratic National Committee, lots of national reporters commenting on the challenge for Whatley in explaining Trump's comments. So let me know what you think. Feel free to write me in social media. Appreciate any of your comments. Like us, share us, the whole thing, to let people know about what we are doing. Thanks for listening to this week's The Issue Is. We'll see you next time with more.